History at hand, revision at your fingertips. Welcome to this first of two podcasts on America and Vietnam. Our aim here is to consider why the Americans built up their military presence. We will look at the role of a succession of American presidents and how they perceived the situation in Indochina, and slowly built up America's economic and then military commitments to this part of Southeast Asia. Vietnam had been part of French Indochina since 1887, but during the Second World War, the Japanese had invaded and occupied. They were successfully resisted by the forces of the Viet Minh under the control of Ho Chi Minh. Ho Chi Minh was a Vietnamese nationalist and a communist. He had spent much of his early life in Europe and was a founding member of the French Communist Party. But in 1941, he returned to Vietnam in order to coordinate the actions of the Viet Minh against the Japanese. When the Japanese surrendered in 1945, Ho Chi Minh set up an independent government in Hanoi, but the French wanted to reassert their imperial authority across Indochina. This resulted in civil war. The Viet Minh fighting against the French. They fought guerrilla tactics, and the French couldn't actually handle and deal with the support that the Viet Minh actually had across the countryside and in the major cities. By the early 1950s, the French were getting tired of their imperial commitments and saw that this war in far-off Indochina was not actually helping the people back in France. They were reliant upon American aid, financial and military, in order to keep the fight going against the guerrilla forces of the Viet Minh. The French decided it was best to pull out from a position of strength, so under the command of General Henri Navarre, they decided to launch one full-pitched battle against the forces of Ho Chi Minh and the Vietnamese. The plan went spectacularly wrong, and General Giap and the Viet Minh were able to inflict a crushing defeat on Henri Navarre's forces at Dien Bien Phu in March 1954. The French were outnumbered and outgunned, 16,000 troops either killed or captured. After this, the French were forced to the negotiating table, but from a position of weakness. The international conference to settle the issues of French Indochina was held in Geneva in later 1954. This brought an end to the fighting. A ceasefire was declared. Laos and Cambodia were declared as independent countries, and Vietnam was temporarily divided along the 17th parallel into a North Vietnam, ruled by Ho Chi Minh and the communists from Hanoi, and a South Vietnam, ruled by the Emperor of Vietnam, Bao Dai, from Saigon. This regime in the south was to be pro-American and capitalist. The aim was that the French would withdraw all their troops within 2 years, and national elections would be held, which would then unite Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh was confident that when elections would be held, then the communists would become successful. Although he'd been forced to compromise and lost the smaller populated South Vietnam, he still believed that he could unite the whole country under his rule. The United States did not actually recognize the Geneva Agreements and saw it as vital that they were able to prevent further communist expansion in this part of Southeast Asia. They were determined to see that South Vietnam would survive on its own 2 feet and not become part of a united communist Vietnam. The United States saw the government of Hanoi as one of revolutionary communism. They didn't really identify it as part of a nationalist Vietnamese independence movement. They believed that Ho Chi Minh was the puppet on the strings being controlled by Moscow. There was grave concern within Washington that should Vietnam become communist, then that would lead to the fall of other countries surrounding it, Laos, Cambodia, then into Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Burma, India even. This theory is known as the domino theory. Containment was vital in order to prevent further communist aggression. With American failure over the fall of China in 1949, and over the failure to roll back in Korea in 1950-53, President Eisenhower saw it as essential that Vietnam maintained a capitalist presence. Eisenhower, like successive presidents, was keen not to lose Vietnam to communism. It would be a massive blow to personal prestige of the president and to the United States authority throughout the world. America were therefore willing to send huge amounts of financial and military aid to South Vietnam in order to support the regime against any communist encroachment. This proved to be a big mistake. South Vietnam was far from being the beacon of capitalism and democracy that the Americans hoped would provide a shining light to the rest of the world. Power in the South started off in the hands of Bao Dai, the Emperor of Vietnam. But he preferred the playboy life in the casinos of Monte Carlo to the actual hard work of running a country. And it was Ngo Dinh Diem who from 1955 emerged as the clear leader of the South Vietnamese. Diem had served in the French administration in the 1930s and had spent a great deal of time in the United States. This gave him a good contact with the USA, which helped to further American aid to South Vietnam. Like many who had served the French, he was a strong Catholic, even though the majority of Vietnamese were Buddhist. He ruled as a dictator, using brutality and force, and also ruling through corruption and nepotism, giving lots of jobs to his family and his in-laws. Diem's brother Nu and his wife Madame Nu were appointed and acted as advisors and ruled many of the local districts of Vietnam. Madame Nu summarized her attitude by saying, "Power is wonderful. Total power is totally wonderful." Her excesses were to become a stain on the entire regime. Diem's Catholic background also brought him into conflict with the other religious groups within Vietnam. He persecuted sects like the Cao Dai and the Hoa Hao and executed their leaders. The majority Buddhists also found their rights and freedoms of worship were limited under Diem. In 1963, protests emerged when it was banned to actually fly Buddha's flag on his birthday. Any of the protests against Diem were ruthlessly crushed by the Army of the Republic of Vietnam and the police forces. Buddhists also started to burn themselves in public. In June 1963, Quang Duc, a 73-year-old monk, set himself alight in the middle of a Saigon street. This was filmed and became the public image of Vietnam throughout the world. Madame Nu added fuel to the fire, saying how much she enjoyed the barbecues. Her husband said he'd be glad to supply the gasoline. Moderate members of the government resigned in protest against the sheer callousness and brutality of Diem's attitude. Even in Washington, people were starting to question, was this the right person to back? In spite of vast amounts of American aid coming into South Vietnam, Diem also spectacularly failed to do anything to help reform the country and increase its prosperity. As a predominantly peasant country, land reform was an important aspect to actually help the well-being of the people. In the north, the communists had carried out land reform which gave people a decent standard of living, but in the south, land reform was very limited. And, if it did happen, usually went to favour rich Catholics and supporters of Diem and his family. It is not hard to see why there was growing opposition within Vietnam to Diem. The lack of democracy meant the only means to protest was through violence. Here, the North could provide a vital role in setting an example and providing resources for those resisting Diem's regime in the South. Up to 1960, there was sporadic violence from former members of the Viet Minh. But in 1960, the National Liberation Front had been formed to oppose Diem. It was actually a group of 12 different organizations, which ranged from nationalists through to communists to Buddhists. They wanted a removal of what they saw as old colonial rule. They wanted to encourage land reform and unification of the whole of Vietnam. These aims appealed to a broad mass of the South Vietnamese population. Guerrilla activities against Diem's regime started. For every active guerrilla fighter fighting for the National Liberation Front, there were many who passively approved of what they were doing and gave them support by keeping their activities secret from the authorities. Diem labelled all resistance to his regime as communist-inspired. This played very well in Washington, who were willing to believe his claims that communism was in danger of swamping South Vietnam. This accelerated the rate of support that they were willing to give to the regime in the South. The resistance movement was labelled as Viet Cong, the Vietnamese Communist. was a label that the Americans used and showed their lack of understanding about what was wrong with South Vietnam. Diem was overthrown by a military coup in 1963. He was replaced by a military dictatorship who espoused many of the same ideas and principles as Diem had done. In spite of all the problems, American support for South Vietnam remained strong. They saw the struggle there refracted through the lens of the Cold War. It was Washington versus Moscow, and Washington needed to come out on top. This oversimplification and failure to understand the Vietnamese context made it increasingly hard for American presidents to resolve the problems that Vietnam presented. In spite of strong reservations about the suitability of Diem's regime, Eisenhower continued to pump advice, resources, and aid into South Vietnam. In order to help resist communist aggression, the Military Assistance Advisory Group was used. The hope was that this would provide the South Vietnamese military, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam, or ARVN, with enough resources and supplies and tactics to be able to resist guerrilla warfare and an assault by the North. On top of that, vast sums of money for nation building were given to South Vietnam. This really just built up the amount of wealth in Diem and his cronies' pockets, but the aim was to make South Vietnam a more prosperous place. As a result, fewer people would turn to communism and try and seek alternatives. It actually seemed the more money that was being given to Diem, the greater the level of support for him declined. Between 1954 and 1960, nearly $1.5 billion of economic aid had been sent. But support for the National Liberation Front continued to rise. It needed a stronger, more military-based solution, perhaps. Eisenhower was reluctant to send combat troops, as was President Kennedy. In the wider context of the Cold War, Khrushchev had been claiming that the Soviet Union was the friend of the independence movement in the post-colonial world, a claim that the Americans also gave. South Vietnam therefore became a model. This is how the Americans can help post-colonial societies. And it wasn't doing a very good job. So Kennedy's prestige, America's prestige, was at stake. Therefore, South Vietnam needed more help. Kennedy sent more aid to help with counterinsurgency measures. 16,000 military advisors were sent, including the Green Berets. These specially trained forces would help the South Vietnamese deal with guerrilla warfare. How they could do this when they were trained in Texas is hard to actually tell. The CIA were also employed to help civilian irregular defense groups to act as local militias in resisting guerrilla operations. The US also developed the policy of strategic hamlets in 1962. This meant moving peasants into fortified villages and away from their own burial grounds and farmland. This was not a popular move, and by 1963, two-thirds of these had been overrun by the Viet Cong. All of these activities were coordinated by the MACV, Military Assistance Command Vietnam. It was hoped that this would be enough to actually quell the insurgency. The president's advisors and the South Vietnamese themselves said that victory was just around the corner and that they were winning the war against the communists. Information coming from Vietnam, through advisors or from the news, actually was often contradictory, and it was very difficult to establish exactly what was happening. This made military planning very difficult indeed, and it made some people start to question what the Americans were doing in there in the first place. Also, this led to the gradual escalation of involvement as they were having to respond to situations as they arose rather than having specific tactics to address the fundamental problems. Kennedy's assassination left the responsibility for dealing with the mess of Vietnam up to his old vice president, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Johnson had not much experience in foreign policy and was over-reliant on his advisors in the early days of his presidency. He was in a difficult situation where all options had their dangers, doing more, doing less, or doing nothing. There was a chance in late 1963 that the United States could withdraw from Vietnam with some honor. The new leader of South Vietnam, General Duong Van Minh, offered to create a government of national unity, a coalition which incorporated the National Liberation Front. That would make South Vietnam a neutral country. Then the Americans could have withdrawn their presence. Johnson followed his advisors, who said that this wasn't a viable option. Therefore, escalation was the only option. The longer Johnson did nothing, the worse the situation on the ground became. By 1964, a third of South Vietnam was in Viet Cong hands. It was a difficult political tightrope to walk. The American public wanted victory in Vietnam, but didn't want to commit vast amounts of troops. So, for most of 1964, advisers continued to flood in. But then, on the 2nd of August 1964, the American destroyer Maddox was fired at by a North Vietnamese patrol boat in the Gulf of Tonkin. This incident led to a much greater escalation of America's presence. This attack, and one on the Turner Joy, another American destroyer, showed how the North Vietnamese were escalating the war and America needed to take strong, bold action against them. Johnson asked Congress for support, and they passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. This gave the president the freedom to send military supplies and troops into Vietnam. Only two senators opposed it. Now Johnson had the blank check to be able to conduct the war more vigorously in Vietnam. We see the rise of American personnel in South Vietnam. In 1962, only 9,000 troops were present. By 1964, it was only 16,000. But by 1966, it had gone up to 268,000 American servicemen. The role of the servicemen was to provide support for the South Vietnamese army and to use America's air superiority to bomb North Vietnam into negotiation or defeat. Viet Cong and North Vietnamese actions were again used to justify the increase in troop numbers going. Rolling Thunder was a program of strategic bombing which should have taken out major military targets in North Vietnam and destroyed the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was supplying the Viet Cong in the south. Its lack of success in drying up the supplies to the Viet Cong meant that further American troops needed to be in on the ground in order to take over from the South Vietnamese army and combat the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops in the jungles of Vietnam. By 1968, General Westmoreland had over 500,000 troops in South Vietnam at his disposal. So, how was it that the Americans had reached this stage when over 500,000 American soldiers were serving in Vietnam? In part, it is due to the fact that the Americans were reluctant to commit troops at an earlier stage, and as a result of that, the strength of the opposition continued to grow. There is a theory called the Quagmire theory that no president was willing to lose Vietnam to communism, but at the same time, they weren't willing enough to make the sacrifices necessary to get Vietnam under full American and democratic control. Eisenhower preferred financial options, Kennedy preferred advice options, and it was down to Johnson then who had to send the troops in and get the flak for doing so. The big problem, though, was that America saw Vietnam in the context of the Cold War. They saw a failure of containment policy in Vietnam as being catastrophic for America's prestige throughout the world and feared the domino effect where the rest of Asia may fall then to communism. It was because of this fear that America had to be involved in Vietnam and found it increasingly difficult to find any exit strategies. Of course, the United States weren't helped by having to support the corrupt South Vietnamese regime under Diem. Their efforts to create a model for democracy failed at the hands of a corrupt and brutal dictator. It would take the technological and military commitments of the late 1960s to prove to America that they could not ever win the situation in Vietnam. Goodbye and good luck.